God, I'm getting older, and so is my mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here tonight, live on 900 AM, the talk of the Palm Beaches. If you're on 95, please drive carefully. It's a holiday week. There are a lot of people who are not normally here. I ask you to be cautious. We'll talk about that in just a second. What an interesting show we have tonight. It really is interesting. My guest, Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, likes to be called Dr. Ben, so I will be calling him Dr. Ben most of the night. He is with Florida Atlantic University, and we're going to talk about all of those things that you should be talking about, but you're afraid to be talking about as we age. Issues that are kind of like the things I talk about most of the time on the show, but from a different perspective. We're going to talk about it from a gerontology perspective. We're going to talk about it from an education perspective. We have a lot. I promise you we're going to run out of time, and you will be disappointed that we do, so stay tuned because you're going to love this. We are now on 4 radio stations, if you did not know that. 900 AM, the Talk of the Palm Beaches, live every Monday night. We're on 103.9 FM, Long Island's Talk Radio, every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. We're on 104.9, the Talk of Gainesville. That's a new one. We're Talk of Gainesville, 8 o'clock every Wednesday night. And, of course, we replay the show here in Palm Beach on 95.9 FM every Saturday morning. I listened to the show, actually, this past Saturday. It was very interesting. Before I get to my guest, I want to give a big shout-out to Joanne Lewis for inviting me to speak to the Southern Deanery at St. Mark's Catholic Church in Boynton this past Saturday. I had such a good time talking about so many things. Some of those things we're going to talk about tonight. And I told them that they were probably wondering what this nice little Jewish kid from Queens was doing there. But it was natural because, as some of you know, both of my sons-in-law are Italian Catholics. So I told them all my grandchildren were cashews, half Catholic, half Jews. They loved it, and then we moved forward. Also, this week is Thanksgiving, and with all the drama of the last few weeks, it is time for us to step back and count our blessings. All too many, however, will be alone, and the holidays can be terribly hard, especially for seniors who are often seniors who have no one for them. So if you know someone who's alone or lonely and you can invite them, please do. If you can't, maybe bring them a dish, send flowers, go knock on their door, say hello. But mostly, if I could encourage you to do one thing and one thing only, it would be, in the words of Tim McGraw, be humble and kind. This is a very important holiday season, and sad for those who have no one to share it with. But now to my guest. I want to welcome Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, who, as I said, likes to be called Dr. Ben. He is a licensed clinical geropsychologist. I'll ask him to explain that as we go. Geropsychologist. He's associate director of the internal medicine residency program in geriatrics and palliative care rotation and assistant professor of the clinical biomedical science in the Department of Integrated Medical Sciences at Florida Atlantic University's Charles E. Schmidt College of Medicine. That's a mouthful, but let me say this. He's really smart. Dr. Bensadon develops, implements, and evaluates training curricula in the classroom and in clinical settings for medical students, for residents, and for other health sciences trainees. And he works clinically in the long-term care, geriatric rehabilitation, outpatient primary care, and specialty settings. He also conducts clinical and medical education research. He is the editor of a collaborative text co-written by physicians and psychologists titled Psychology and Geriatrics, Integrated Care for an Aging Population. And he has co-authored book chapters on management decisions in mild cognitive impairment and in geriatric neurology. Dr. Ben received his doctoral training at the University of Florida, and he completed a postdoctoral fellowship in the Donald W. Reynolds Department of Geriatric Medicine at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. And he has published and lectured nationally and internationally. And what he thinks is most important is he was raised in part by his grandmother. So, Dr. Ben, welcome to the show. Welcome to OMG. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So, there's so much to talk about from your book and from your work. I'm of the opinion that healthcare is changing so fast, and the audience listening to this show simply can't keep up. There's all this new terminology. There's this new medical practice groups. Everybody is an employee now. They don't have private. There's so much change going on. There's affordable care organizations, ACOs, on and on and on. So let's start with the kind of at the 30,000 foot level. Where are we and where are we going?
That's a daunting question. I'm not sure we have enough time to really answer that. The country's waiting to see the answer. But one thing that's happening is people are living longer, so they're living sicker. And chronic disease is blanketing the country. And the model, certainly of medical training historically, has been an acute model, maybe subacute model, where you get hospitalized, quote-unquote fix the problem, and then get discharged. Managing chronic disease, which can last the rest of one's life for years and years, has not been the focus. So the training is starting to change a little bit, but that's very difficult to do. Where we're going, the Affordable Care Act has put in new legislation to try and I think improve some things, give some insurance to people who didn't have it, give coverage to areas that weren't necessarily covered, including mental health, certainly in the interest of mine. What will happen with that now after our new election, I don't know. So we'll see. But as you mentioned, stakeholders in healthcare keep growing, and it seems like everybody, you know, sort of wants a piece of the pie, which may or may not be helpful to patients and their families. So in some ways, your guess is as good as mine. So we'll have to get back to the answer to that, but hopefully we're going in the right direction.
You mentioned something really important in the opening there. You talked about chronic disease. Most seniors, or many seniors, I'm not sure what the statistics are, they have two or more chronic conditions that affect their ability to live their best life possible. How is that being impacted, or what is the impact of that?
Certainly the way I look at it, again, my lens, so to speak, is a behavioral one. So when you have a chronic disease, what does that mean? It means what you have can't be cured, and you're sort of in some way stuck with it for the rest of your life. So maybe you have to take medication every day. Maybe you have to take the medication the right way, as prescribed, which can be difficult, especially if you have multiple medications. You may not be able to predict your symptoms day by day. Some it may be sort of slighter than the next day. You never know what to expect. You may lose motivation. Support is sort of very helpful and needed and often not provided by standard healthcare to support you in taking medication, to adjusting your lifestyle, to exercising more, etc. Older people do bear the brunt of chronic disease. I think it's approximately 50% have two chronic conditions. So that can take a big toll on your psyche as well as your rest of your body. So that's certainly been an interest of mine.
And the mental health component, I got the rest of the show out of that one line, but the mental health component of that translates into depression, drug abuse, alcohol abuse. This is not just having two chronic diseases. It becomes pervasive in your life. Am I right?
Sure. I mean, if we want to go back 300 or more years, the split between mental and quote-unquote physical health, that's pretty artificial, though. That's what we've done. And unfortunately, the way these things are cared for, we put a lot of money investment, you know, into taking care of one with a bit less than taking care of the other. Mental health parity is a formal law that was put into place. But if you ask, you know, physicians and other clinicians, it's still difficult to get coverage payment, particularly in South Florida, for quote-unquote mental health conditions. It's very difficult to do. Medicare is probably the best payer in terms of financing the support of that. But the other insurance companies have a lot of resistance to covering some of those services. And if they do cover them, they're often time limited, which, you know, 100 years ago when theories were written about human behavior, there was no, you know, insurance, you know, influence at the time. So putting time limits on this stuff is sort of arbitrary.
It is interesting. You mentioned early on about the impact of the medications that we're on. I do talk about that. I talk about polypharmacy being a real drain on our senior population. The average Medicare discharge today is on 13 medications when they come out of the hospital, typically prescribed by three different physicians. But there are interactions with these drugs. People are not fully understand. I mean, we're blessed from the perspective of there's great medications out there that can help us overcome some of our chronic diseases or other diseases. But there is a cause and effect. Am I correct about that?
Sure. In fact, the chair of our department, which is why I came to work at FAU, he co-wrote something called the Beers List, B-E-E-R-S, named after a physician named Mark Beers. That was sort of outlining all the potentially inappropriate interacting medications to sort of guide, you know, practitioners and prescribing practices not to sort of put things together that could be harmful. Nonetheless, as you just cited, it happens all the time. In part, I think, at least with regard to medications that are sort of psychotropic medications for mood, depression, anxiety, and so on, we're treating psychosocial problems in a biomedical model, and that doesn't usually work, and that's sort of, I think, in part what we're experiencing in the country, certainly where I am here. There are patients who are 80 and older on three different psychotropic medications, including antipsychotics, which are very potent, which are used sort of to sedate people. And you've spoken about dementia, I think, in the past. People with dementia and memory impairment can get aggressive and agitated. And often in hospitals, the move is to sort of control them by sedating them because it's very difficult to manage, which, you know, is somewhat understandable. But again, these are very potent medications with potential long-term side effects.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole show in and of itself. It really is.
I warned you about that.
I do try to, for the listening audience, if you're just tuning in, I'm here with Dr. Dr. Ben, from Florida Atlantic University, and we have so much to talk about. Well, one of the examples I just used it Saturday at that group that I talked about, is that my daughter, it doesn't have to be only seniors, although it is worse in seniors because we are more prone to just write a script, but my daughter, who is a kind of a health nut, in a positive way, I mean, she's very nutritiously focused and anti-medications. Her son was ill and was on an antibiotic, and not thinking clearly, she gave him his regular probiotic in the morning, not realizing that the probiotic was counterbalancing the antibiotic, and consequently my grandson was not getting better from whatever it was that made him sick. Drug interactions matter. Right? I mean, they really do. When you talk about three psychotropic drugs on somebody with dementia, I mean, that's somebody who's, you know, couldn't function before because of the dementia. Now they're really in trouble, right?
Yep. And pharmacokinetics is sort of what the body does to the drug and how quickly it metabolizes. That changes with age. So things stay in your system longer as you get older. So it can increase sort of the potency of whatever you're putting in your body. Yep.
Do physicians fully understand this? Because I'm of the opinion they don't. You know, I'm not indicting all physicians, and I know you aren't either. You're training physicians. You're bringing new physicians out. Is the physician world prepared for this?
I think the sensitivity to the issues is variable. And I think, you know, geriatric medicine has tried its best for many, you know, years to legitimize itself as a board-certifiable subspecialty in medicine. It's been very difficult to do that in South Florida because the patient population is old. Many people see a lot of older patients and feel that they are, quote-unquote, geriatricians by default. And then you can get into sort of, you know, arguments about that. I think the sensitivity is certainly what has, you know, impressed me about geriatric medicine to these issues is, you know, comes from the training. By the way, it has not been very popular, becoming a geriatrician, geriatric medicine subspecialty training. In fact, started as a two-year fellowship, but due to the lack of popularity, is now a one-year fellowship. And there are a lot of reasons for that, including reimbursement, also stereotyping. And it's not quite glamorous. A lot of the people who go into medicine now, historically certainly, go into cure and to sort of save people, which, you know, is probably a good thing. And geriatrics is mostly management of, you know, chronic disease. So it's not necessarily perceived as glamorous.
About a year and a half ago, maybe more, I had a guest on, Dr. Noshira Pandya, I think, and she's the head of the geriatrics program at
Nova Southeastern.
Right. Thank you. I knew I was going to forget that. And she repeated just what you said. They have trouble filling all of their spots there. And when you realize that that is a built-in practice for the next forever, which we'll talk about when we come back. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. Happily here tonight with Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, who likes to be referred to as Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben is a licensed clinical geropsychologist, and he is at Florida Atlantic University helping to teach physicians the things they need to be thinking about differently, particularly when it comes to the senior population. If you have questions for myself or for Dr. Bensadon, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Scott, caregiver stress is really a silent killer, isn't it?
It really is, Mike. The statistics are astounding. Nearly 64% of family caregivers taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's and dementia without having outside help will predecease their loved one who has Alzheimer's and dementia. The stress of taking care of a loved one with a chronic disease can take a terrible toll, and the need for a respite is never more apparent than when you're feeling the most stressed.
So, Scott, your services can be provided for just a couple of hours a day so we can live our normal life.
Yes, Mike. Even a couple of hours away from the family member who is struggling with a chronic disease can give you the break that you need to take care of yourself. Get your hair done, go out and play cards, maybe a round of golf, go see a movie. All of these are things that will help you take care of your loved one better if you're in a better frame of mind. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines your quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us, 561-630-1620.
I'm here with Tino Negri of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Tino, you guys are really going above and beyond when it comes to training your staff for Alzheimer's care.
So, Mike, a lot of people complain about their caregivers being on the phone all day. At Comfort Care, we are training our caregivers to keep your loved ones active, engaged, and stimulated.
And Tino, what are some of the things you're doing to make your caregivers better equipped to take care of people with Alzheimer's?
So twice a month, I'm bringing our caregivers in to our office for specialized training on behavior modification and cognitive stimulation activities designed to keep your loved ones active when the caregivers are there staying with them. We find caregivers respond favorably when they have the tools at their disposal to take care of your loved one. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of your life. So let our family take care of your family. 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. And welcome to you new listeners to our show at 104.9, The Talk of Gainesville. We're happy that you have joined our family. And for those on Long Island and here in Palm Beach, we're glad that you are still with us. I'm here tonight with Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, a.k.a. Dr. Ben. He is at Florida Atlantic University, and he is a licensed clinical geropsychologist. I don't think I pronounced that properly. And he's helping to train physicians on geriatrics. Before we broke, we just touched on, we want to come back to it, we just touched on the fact that the practice of gerontology, the medical practice of gerontology, is hard to attract medical students to. And it's always astounding to us because the 10,000 people a day turning 65 for the next 15 or so years, and that's been going on for 5 years. You want to talk about a growing demographic, it's going to be wonderful. But Dr. Ben has thoughts about why that is and what it speaks to. So roll with it.
Sure. Well, just for terminology's sake, so geriatrics and gerontology often go together. Just an important distinction. Gerontology, which you mentioned, that's actually the study of the aging process, whereas geriatrics is care of the aging people. So I'd sort of try and be clear about that.
Okay.
Because most of the country's not. Why is it so difficult to recruit people into geriatrics and to join the workforce? Many reasons. In part, certainly, there's an economic issue. Reimbursement in the United States is largely procedural-based. In geriatrics, due to several issues, including risk, procedures are not generally performed that much. So by definition, you won't earn as much money because you won't perform as many procedures. But that's not the only issue. Working with people who are basically versions of you just 10, 20, 30 years down the road can be very difficult to look at every day. There are a lot of limitations in what one can do for older people in terms of curative measures. And no one is immune to that, physician included. So I think that's a big deal. That has not been addressed that much in certainly in geriatrician training, to my knowledge. I've done some of that in geriatrics, both in Oklahoma and now here. In fact, one of the things I've created is an end-of-life simulation. So simulation training is pretty big now throughout the country. It's a safe sort of environment to do things before you actually get into a hospital medical setting without, you know, minimal risk for harm. So started this when I came here about 3 years ago. I had a wonderful woman named Ethel, who was 92 at the time, living here nearby in Abbey Del Rey. She was a woman who was a widow for several years. She had two children who lived out of state. She had sort of come to peace with where her life was and was ready to die. She still ambulated. She had a walker, but she ambulated and was totally intact cognitively, but sort of had enough. And when you meet someone like that, it's pretty powerful. So she was very interested in working with the students, so we would bring her to the school. Essentially, I actually acted in the role play with her. She would wear a nasal cannula, and we'd have an oxygen tank in the room. She would play someone who has COPD as of about 7 years and who had recently been diagnosed, not to her face, with a terminal cancer, lung cancer, metastatic lung cancer. And the job for the student, the third-year student, was to come in the room and have an office visit with us and basically break the news to us. And the response from the students ran the gamut. I was very emotional for some of them. A couple had sort of panic attacks in the room, heart palpitation. We had to discontinue it. Others broke into rashes, sweating, shaking, a lot of discomfort. And that was sort of the point. Now, we actually videotaped that encounter, and then I would break it down with them after, one-on-one, and then we would see their reaction, try to build some insights into what it's like, let them see what they, you know, how they come across in a clinical setting, because moments like that are very rare in medical training, and when they're actually on the wards in the hospital, they will never see themselves. There was a psychologist named Festinger, I think about 45 years ago, who talked about cognitive dissonance, where there's sort of how you think you are and then how you really are. And the video was a very powerful tool to show you the discrepancy. And it's very threatening. And people don't like to see that. People, you know, squirm, I don't want to see myself on tape. That's part of why. So in this case, for example, students would swear they never interrupted. They'd see the tape and then they'd say, oh my God, look how much I interrupted. Or they say, I know I asked about an advanced directive. They'd watch the tape and saw that they didn't. It's a great way to correct for the gaps, but it's also very threatening, and it's rare still. So that was one of the things I put into play there.
That's really fascinating to think about. Did it serve to chase those third-year students further away from geriatrics as a practice, or did it bring anybody to the practice, and did it change their behavior going forward? Because that's really kind of a fascinating story.
Sure, and one of the challenges in general with medical education and medical education research is the follow-up, because people go to residency all over the country. They often don't stay where you've done your undergraduate
right.
training. It'd be nice in a good study to try and show what impact, if any, this had on their decision-making. I can say at least one example was a woman who thought she was a good communicator, watched the video, and was so aghast that her performance actually was crying in the session when we watched it, and decided, you know, sort of thinking she might go into something more procedural with limited communication because she thought she was a poor communicator. So I think she was opting for surgery at the time.
That is really interesting. So I wasn't going to ask this right away, but I will, because I'm going to save the bigger conversation for after the next break. But does this create a physician burnout more quickly when you are dealing with kind of these very difficult issues with senior citizens who are going through challenging times in their lives, both with chronic disease and I call it smelling the grass. I know that's not, you know, what we want to call it, but that's what it is. Does that result in a more complex quality of life for the physician?
Exposure to geriatrics or?
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's the opposite. When they've tried to measure physician satisfaction and fulfillment, historically, geriatrics has been toward the top.
Really?
And that's inversely proportional to the reimbursement rate, which is pretty interesting in and of itself.
It
now,
is.
Unfortunately, certainly from my purview, what I've seen, whenever there's conversation about disappointment or lack of fulfillment in the job in medicine, the main focus is reimbursement rate. But there's numerous studies, not just geriatrics-oriented, showing that what really fulfills physicians in general is the things that we would talk about as sort of intuitive, such as, you know, making an impact on the patient, safeguarding their welfare, things that sound good and why one would go into medicine to help. Those are borne out as actually, based on the data, what leads to fulfillment. But again, the economics is a much more objective, quantifiable, target, and that's what's talked about a lot, is sort of the panacea would be just pay more and everything would be fine, which is false.
So if you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. And if your mom is getting older, tonight's show is for you because Dr. Benjamin Bensadon is here. He is a specialist in both geriatrics and gerontology. He's teaching medical students at FAU, at Florida Atlantic University. We're talking about so many things that are important for us to consider as we go down this aging highway. I know I've already learned things that I had no idea, and I'm frankly surprised about. So I hope that you will stay around. But, of course, if you have questions for my guest, Dr. Ben, Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, likes to be known as Dr. Ben, from Florida Atlantic University. If you have questions for him or for me, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison Negri of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Allison, Comfort Care is a family-owned and operated business.
We are, Mike. It's myself, my husband Tino, and my parents Irene and Scott. We're all thoroughly involved in the day-to-day operations of the business. So many of our clients' families do not live locally and therefore count on us to be their local eyes and ears. Every one of our clients has access to an owner day or night, and we do monitor our office phones 24 hours, 7 days a week by a member of our office staff.
So, Allison, family's very important to you guys at Comfort Care Senior Services.
It really is, Mike. I was very involved with my grandmother before she passed away, so we understand how important it is for everyone in the family, not just the senior needing care, to be a part of the equation. We talk to family members on a regular basis. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines your quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. 561-630-1620.
I'm here with Tino Negri of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Tino, you guys are really going above and beyond when it comes to training your staff for Alzheimer's care.
So, Mike, a lot of people complain about their caregivers being on the phone all day. At Comfort Care, we are training our caregivers to keep your loved ones active, engaged, and stimulated.
And Tino, what are some of the things you're doing to make your caregivers better equipped to take care of people with Alzheimer's?
So twice a month, I'm bringing our caregivers in to our office for specialized training on behavior modification and cognitive stimulation activities designed to keep your loved ones active when the caregivers are there staying with them. We find caregivers respond favorably when they have the tools at their disposal to take care of your loved one. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of your life. So let our family take care of your family. 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome, everybody. It's Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. If it's Monday night, you're listening on 900 AM, the Talk of the Palm Beaches. If it's Wednesday night, you could be listening on our news station, 104.9 FM, the Talk of Gainesville, or 103.9 Long Island's Talk Radio. And of course, if you're listening on Saturday morning, I hope you have a beautiful day ahead. It's Thanksgiving week. I hope everybody is humble and kind this week. Treat people the way you'd like to be treated and all will go well. My guest tonight is Dr. Benjamin Bensadon, likes to be known as Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben is at Florida Atlantic University. And amongst other things, he is helping, physicians learn how to be better physicians. There are some other things. We're never going to get to everything I want to talk to tonight, but I have one thing that's really important because we've been talking about the geriatric population and how medicine is impacting them, about chronic diseases, end-of-life presentation or preparation. We've been talking about some medication. There's a couple of things we've been there. But one of the most important things that I know Dr. Bensadon feels strongly about is that as this geriatric population grows, expands, and it's going to expand exponentially in the years ahead, the workforce to take care of all of us as we age has to evolve, and it's probably not evolving as fast as it should. So what does the geriatric workforce look like, and what are we in for, and what should we be doing about it?
Well, so it's important to know this isn't just limited to medicine. Gerontological nurse practitioners are limited. Geropsychologists, as I would describe myself, are limited. In general, aging doesn't sell itself. So there are a lot of reasons for that, as I sort of alluded to. One of the challenges I find here, certainly because there's such a demographic imperative, which you allude to, that what happens if we're not paying attention is we start to sort of tell any learner, look, you need to know this. You're going to deal with older people, and you almost threaten them to get with it and learn about these things versus sell the joy of it. That's a subtle distinction, but I think it's hard to keep that straight. I've talked with colleagues in medicine outside about trying to sell the joy a bit more versus, you know, threaten with, look, you need to know these things. But to give an example, we have our residents in internal medicine. They do rotations in different, you know, subspecialties. So ophthalmology, for example, vision, very important. I was speaking to them recently. They do a month-long rotation in ophthalmology. So I asked them jokingly, you see any geriatric patients? They say, oh, of course, Dr. Benson, this is a self-already setting. Of course, geriatric patients. Okay. Anybody mention driving? No. You think it's relevant? Yes. They smile. I smile. We move on. These are sort of issues that are really dangerous to avoid and avoid it nonetheless. So I think that's a key. I mean, there are many, we've chatted briefly, you and I, about these thorny subjects that are particularly important in, you know, elder care.
No, and it is, you know, I think I'm in elder care. I don't talk about it on the radio very much. You know, we talk about finding joy in the journey. We talk about that particularly as it relates to dementia, and we train in finding joy in the journey and trying to take advantage of that which is preserved. But you're right. There are so many things that can impact us negatively trying to find joy. You mentioned ophthalmology, which happens to be a hot button topic with me at the moment. On this radio show, ophthalmologists get most phone calls because people are worried about cataracts and dry eye and glaucoma, et cetera, et cetera. But I myself have a retinal problem right now. And I was out the other day and I was having a particularly bad day and I almost pulled off the side of the road to let my wife drive instead of my driving. And my ophthalmologist, my retinal specialist, never talked to me about driving and whether I should. And, of course, I didn't ask him because the last thing in the world I wanted to hear was you shouldn't be driving, Scott. So there are so many component parts of this aging highway that we go down that is impacted. And I think you touched on one of kind of the hot button topics for me is that I don't think our medical practitioners are prepared for this. Or even if they are, they don't have time anymore because of what you talked about earlier, which is the reimbursement rates. So are we out of control? Are we going down this spiral that we cannot stop, or is there hope?
Well, there's always hope. I'll say that for the rest of my life. I think what you're witnessing is sort of the corporate influence, which has, you know, restricted the encounter times to what they are. That didn't come out of nowhere. So, you know, in their defense, certainly most physicians, primary care and otherwise, are limited in time to do what they have to do, so they try and figure out what's the most priority and focus on that, generally the biomedical. But as we're talking about, that's attached to all kinds of issues related to quality of life, including driving. So, you know, what do you do? Again, I think physicians and all clinicians need support to try and manage what they, you know, have in front of them in less time to do it. And support has not been something the healthcare system has provided, ever, to the clinician, especially in medicine. So you combine that with a culture where you're sort of supposed to be above needing anything so you can focus on patients, and it can be in some ways disastrous, and that's where the burnout occurs. Last week I was in Seattle for the Association of American Medical Colleges annual meeting. That's the organization that governs medical education nationally. Burnout, resilience, and well-being were, you know, among clinicians and learners, was a hot topic, many sessions on that. But, you know, there are data showing the difficulties there, early retirement, substance use among clinicians, depression among clinicians, certainly learners, pretty high levels, more at risk for suicide, in fact, than the average population. So the data are there. The question becomes, okay, so how do we respond to that? What do we invest to try and protect the workforce? And honestly, as sobering as this sounds, that's sort of, you know, debatable at this point. It's unknown what that will look like in the future. So there's a lot of pressure on all kinds of clinicians to do more in less time. And without support, it's sort of challenging.
Does the growing advent of big corporate medical practices contribute to what we're talking about in a positive or negative way?
Sure. And I think since I've been down in South Florida, where it's, you know, I'm coming from the Northeast. I was in Oklahoma a little bit, and before that, Northeast, Boston, New York, and so on, where it's an academic climate. Academic training centers. South Florida is a for-profit corporate environment. You know, where we are, we're trying to morph it into more of an academic setting, but that's very slow, and there's mixed feelings about that. So does that have an impact on the level of care? Absolutely. On what's paid for and provided? Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, specifically around mental health, quote-unquote, issues, a lot of reluctance to support that. And, you know, that's totally misaligned, in fact, with the needs of the geriatric population in the country, for whom anxiety and depression in particular are fairly high.
You'd be interested to know I'm going to do a show very soon on mental health training for the average person, kind of a first responder, for lack of a better term, training. I'm going to be doing that very soon. I'm going to train my team, but also I'm going to be doing a radio show about it. There's a clinician out here who's doing a lot of training at Alpert Jewish Family and Children's Services, and they're going to be a guest real soon. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here tonight with Dr. Benjamin Bensadon from Florida Atlantic University, who is a general psychologist. We're talking about so many issues that are important to us as we age and as our parents age. These are really kind of critical issues that take a lot of thought. This is not just, you know, what are we going to do with mom when she has to move to an assisted living facility? These are much more important issues because they affect the fabric of our day-to-day lives, not just the physical aspect of it, but the mental aspect of it as well. If you're one of our new listeners at 104.9 The Talk of Gainesville, we welcome you to the show. If you're on the other stations listening to us, I can't thank you enough for being here each and every week. If you have questions for my guest, you can call us, or for me, by the way, you can call us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Scott, caregiver stress is really a silent killer, isn't it?
It really is, Mike. The statistics are astounding. Nearly 64% of family caregivers taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's and dementia without having outside help will predecease their loved one who has Alzheimer's and dementia. The stress of taking care of a loved one with a chronic disease can take a terrible toll, and the need for a respite is never more apparent than when you're feeling the most stressed.
So, Scott, your services can be provided for just a couple of hours a day so we can live our normal life.
Yes, Mike. Even a couple of hours away from the family member who is struggling with a chronic disease can give you the break that you need to take care of yourself. Get your hair done, go out and play cards, maybe a round of golf, go see a movie. All of these are things that will help you take care of your loved one better if you're in a better frame of mind. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines your quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us, 561-630-1620.
I'm here with Allison Negri of Comfort Care Senior Services. And Allison, Comfort Care is a family-owned and operated business.
We are, Mike. It's myself, my husband Tino, and my parents Irene and Scott. We're all thoroughly involved in the day-to-day operations of the business. So many of our clients' families do not live locally and therefore count on us to be their local eyes and ears. Every one of our clients has access to an owner day or night, and we do monitor our office phones 24 hours, 7 days a week by a member of our office staff.
So, Allison, family's very important to you guys at Comfort Care Senior Services.
It really is, Mike. I was very involved with my grandmother before she passed away, so we understand how important it is for everyone in the family, not just the senior needing care, to be a part of the equation. We talk to family members on a regular basis. After all, at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines your quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh my God, I'm getting older and so is my mom. And tonight's show is particularly about those of us who are ourselves getting older and who have parents that are getting older. This is a really fascinating subject, and my guest tonight is an expert in talking about this in a slightly different way. We're not just talking about your bones creaking and taking new medications. We're talking about having a new thought process about getting older, about how our medical system needs to change its approach in dealing with seniors, and how the fact that our medical society is changing dramatically, it is not necessarily changing dramatically
in the best interest of our senior population. It's not deliberate necessarily. It's just not in concert with it. And Dr. Benjamin Bensadon from Florida Atlantic University, who educates, teaches, lectures about ageism and talks about so many other things, is a clinical geropsychologist, and he's got a really fascinating insight into so much of that which affects us as we age. Dr. Bensadon, as I said, I'm going to run out of time before I run out of things to say. First off, for people who are just tuning in, or people who have been listening the whole time, how do people find you? How do they learn more about you? How do they reach you?
I mean, I think the best way, if my name is put into the web, Bensadon, Bensadon, and geriatrics, a bunch of things should come up in Google or what have you. I do have a phone number at work, which is, I can give it now, that's 561-297-2578. It's 561-297-2578. And an email, which is bbensadon@health.fau.edu. bbensadon@health.fau.edu. Those are the best ways for now. I'm working on a personal website, but I haven't had time to finish that up yet as well.
I haven't really talked about your book at all, so let's talk about your book, because I guess we were supposed to talk about that a lot, and we've gotten off on tangents. Let's talk about your book. Tell us more about it.
Well, as you might be able to tell, I've been thinking about this for quite a while now. And yes, in fact, I was raised in part by my grandmother, so that's sort of from an earlier age gave birth to this affinity for the older person, and I thought that would be a worthwhile mission for the rest of my life. I trained in psychology because I found this was a gap for many years, not just the last couple, in care that I was thinking I could help fill. So that's why I sort of did what I've done so far. The book is actually called Psychology and Geriatrics, Integrated Care for an Aging Population. Again, the operative term being integrating the care, like I was suggesting. Which, you know, I'm not the first to suggest that. That's been suggested for decades. In fact, in 1977, someone named George Engel at the University of Rochester Medical Center wrote a paper in the journal Science, one of the more prestigious journals we have in the world, looking for a new paradigm beyond just biomedicine, but the biopsychosocial model, which sort of encapsulates what we've been talking about today, as that should be standard. Now, he wrote that in 77, and this is 2016, so about 50 years later, still not in practice. And there are people who predate him. So it's certainly, you know, it's very frustrating, but it's also very possible if we're willing to try and think outside the box. The book is it's a group. I created the idea. I assembled a team of physicians and psychologists, mostly focused on geriatrics, geropsychologists and geriatricians, tackling the issues, as we've talked about, that many people have trouble addressing, certainly within medicine, and that the public is desperate to address. For example, driving, as I mentioned, end-of-life care, suicide prevention, caregiving, informal caregiving, meaning families who take on the brunt of it in this country and often actually die before the one they're caring for, attitudes, beliefs, and behavior, their role in your, you know, practice, and simulation education that I was mentioning earlier. So these are sort of the main chapter topics that I've tried to address. And I'm most proud of the fact that we have about an even split between physician and psychologist in the book, because that's not been reflected in our healthcare system very much. Now, an important exception to that is the VA, the Veterans Association. In the VA, there's something called primary care mental health integration, which is mandated from the VA central office in D.C. throughout the country in every hospital. And it's mandated that these, you know, providers who are primary care physicians, nurse practitioners, and psychologists actually work in the same hallway. Co-location, that's the term used. Some of that is done to prevent, you know, challenges due to stigma. So when you refer someone to the quote-unquote mental health wing, they may not follow up. There's, you know, evidence documenting that. But if it's a hallway and what's called warm handoffs between the providers, it's seamless, takes place in the moment, and you just see one doctor and see another one. It's sort of ingenious, and it's simple, but it's ingenious. That has not taken off outside the VA.
And why is that?
So, again, I'm not the first to sort of try and advocate for this, but the explanations so far have been linked to payment. VA is a different payment source, and I think that's a large part of it. But again, it's sort of hard to reconcile. I mean, the military needs are not that different from those of the non-military population. So the sort of precedent is there if we're willing to try and make that happen. The Institute of Medicine, in fact, two of its more recent reports, which are 600-plus pages at a time, that sort of evaluate objectively the care quality in the country, have focused one on dying in America. That's the title, so end-of-life care. And after that was one about psychosocial interventions being actually delivered and the lack thereof. And they said very frankly, in spite of evidence supporting them, they're still not delivered. I can be very blunt. You've sort of allowed that. As far as will this ever change, as I was saying to you in the break, if every provider who's accessible in the healthcare system is medically trained, the idea that we will somehow have psychosocial gaps addressed by medically trained people is a nice idea, but it's not rational. And until that happens, I don't know why we would think somehow we can rectify the situation. However, I'm not in the government. What is happening instead, for example, there are these sort of add-ons. For example, nurse practitioners who've been gaining a lot of momentum, and I work with some, College of Nursing, great people, can now do a one-year add-on credential to be a psychiatric or mental health nurse practitioner. Idea being that will be enough to be able to fill the role also of psychologist, let's say. Social work sometimes is in the mix. Pharmacy sometimes in the mix. Clinical psychologists are rarely in the mix, except in the VA where they're mandated. So again, if that were to change, probably good things could happen for people. But that hasn't happened.
And that problem is going to be exacerbated over time, as what you said also during the break, the less access we have to primary care physicians, and as we move down, taking nothing away from physicians assistants, PAs, or nurse practitioners, the reality is they're not doctors and they don't have the same training. And while they mean well and are dedicated and the system would fall apart without them, there are changes. If you just tuned in, I'm sorry because you missed a great show. My guest tonight, Dr. Benjamin Bensadon from Florida Atlantic University, is a geropsychologist, and we have been talking about the aging process, not the physical aging process necessarily, but the mental aspect of aging. Again, not so much from a specific mental health perspective of the patient, but of those that serve the patient. And it's really, really fascinating. But I have good news, because if you wish you had been here from the beginning, you can be. You can podcast. You can pick us up on podcast. We podcast usually out first thing tomorrow morning. Just search OMG, I'm getting, and up we will pop. Of course, those who are not podcasters, you can go to our website, palmbeach.comforcare.com, palmbeach.comforcare.com, and listen to this show and any others that may have interest for you. No excuse if you don't have a radio anymore. You all have smartphones. I know you do. There is a free app. It's called TuneIn Radio. You can just set it to 900 AM, the talk of the Palm Beaches, every Monday night at 5 o'clock, and you can pick us up on your smartphone. Of course, you can do that on the other stations we're on as well, 103.9 FM on Long Island, Long Island's Talk Radio, 104.9 The Talk of Gainesville, and 95.9 Saturday morning at 8 o'clock here in Palm Beach. We also simulcast locally around the state, around the nation, and around the world at www.900thetalk.com. Remember, it is Thanksgiving this week. There's a lot of new people out and about. There's a lot of family. Tensions can get high. Stress can elevate. Turkey can put you to sleep. But there's a lot of other things out there. There are people out there who are lonely, who are alone. Do something nice for somebody this week. Remember that we are fortunate, regardless of what you think of the outcome of the election, we are fortunate to live in the land that we do, and it's time to give back. Next week, Louisa McQueenie is going to be here. She is from Florida Chain. Florida Chain is an organization that helps navigate the healthcare system for those here living in Florida. So we know about open enrollment for Medicare and for managed care, but there's also open enrollment for Obamacare and for Affordable Care Act. And for those of us who are under 65 or know someone who is, navigating those waters is very difficult. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the decisions you have to make. If you need health care coverage by January 1st, you're going to have to make some decisions by December 15th. So next week's show is going to be timely. Open enrollment does go to January 31st, but you won't receive coverage until later. In 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about guardianship. Guardianship is a very big issue these days, particularly here in Florida. There's a lot of activism about that. Many people know I am on the board of the National Guardianship Association. I'm also past president of the Florida State Guardianship Association. My guests are going to be Anthony Palmieri, who is the chief investigator for the Palm Beach County clerk and controller, Sharon Bach. Sharon was supposed to be here, but she's been called to Tallahassee. Anthony is the chief investigator for her office. He's going to be here, along with noted attorney Mitchell Kittrosser. Mitch is a good friend of mine. He is a guardianship expert. This is a complicated time for guardianship, and these two are going to help us decipher what guardianship is and what, in fact, you should know about that. So I hope that you'll tune in. My guest tonight, Dr. Benjamin Bensadon. Dr. Bensadon, we really don't have a whole lot of time left. So much I want to ask, we don't. How did this become your passion? Because you are clearly passionate about this subject.
Well, again, some of it is personal in terms of being raised in part by my grandmother. But I thought long and hard about what I could really respect for the rest of my life. And, you know, this is a really good fight. I respect older people in the aging process. You know, Betty Davis, I think she said, it's one of the pieces in my book, actually, the quote, "Old age ain't no place for sissies." And I really can deeply, you know, appreciate that. And I'm trying to sort of minimize the suffering if and when it's associated with aging. But I would throw one thing out there we didn't really talk much about. We talked a lot about the educational components, but I work clinically every day. I'm in the hospital once a week. I'm in the outpatient clinic twice a week. I'm in the memory and wellness center twice a week. So I'm seeing patients every day, which is essential to try and give credibility, I think, to the message I'm trying to, you know, disseminate. And when I go to medical conferences, I make sure to point that out, and I use patient examples because that makes a difference. If it's just sort of talking theoretically, you sort of, you know, a lot of people tune out. But I see patients every day who, you know, sort of see things the way I do. And it sort of reinforces the clarity I have that this stuff has to happen, and I'll keep trying to push.
And you're right, we didn't talk about the clinical aspect of your practice. So on that note, why don't we give them your phone number so if people are interested, they can reach you.
Sure. Again, it's 561-297-2578. That's 561-297-2578. And one of the things I've been trying to do, you know, you mentioned the holiday and being lonely. You know, isolation kills, and that's been documented multiple times. And having people around you does not mean you do not feel isolated. It's not just a numeric factor. So I've been trying to target the homebound, doing home-based related care. I did that in the VA. They have something called home-based primary care. So the homebound elders are in great need, and I'm trying to help fill that need.
And you're doing a great job. I can't tell you how excited I am and glad that you managed to get here. I know you've been very busy. It's a tough time. You drove up from down south, and I really appreciate it. You're a wealth of information. I hope you'll consider coming back one day.
Gladly.
Yeah. If you're new to us, this is Scott Greenberg. This is Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We talk about issues each and every week that affect boomers and their aging parents. It's a show that tries to just put good information in the hands of our audience to help them navigate this aging highway. We try to do it with humor. We try to do it with good information. We don't have an agenda. We hope that you enjoy. My guest tonight is the kind of guest that we have regularly. So if you're new, please come back. If you're a regular, I can't thank you enough for still being with us. We really do appreciate it. We're on four different radio stations now. We have a lot of listeners. We get lots of ideas from you. If there's a subject that you'd like us to talk about, please let us know. Again, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. Live every Monday night on 900 AM, The Talk of the Palm Beaches. We replay at 8 o'clock Wednesdays on 104.9, The Talk of Gainesville. At 9 o'clock on 103.9, Long Island's Talk Radio. And again on Saturday morning, 95.9, The Palm. We hope that you have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We hope that you enjoy every bit of everything that you want. We look forward to seeing you again next Monday. So to all, have a good night, and thank you for being here. Good night, all.